Welcome in to First Things First. I'm Sarah Kustak, filling in for Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Good show.
Good to see you, Sarah.
Great
to see you.
Thank
you for stepping in today.
Musical chairs.
Right. Sarah was here the last couple days, and now she's right there.
Yeah, no problem. She's just dropping assists from a different spot. I'll take it. I'm going to fill it up today.
Boom. Good to know.
Good stuff on the way. There's a new favorite to land Kawhi Leonard next season. There is new hope that KD could be back in the finals. But we're going to start with the Lakers. A destructive article came out yesterday describing their dysfunction in detail. Among the accusations, Magic Johnson was described as a bully. GM Rob Pelinka doesn't always seem to tell the truth. LeBron's agent, Rich Paul, was described as a culture killer, advocating for Luke Walton to be gone as early as November of last season. Nick, who is to blame for the Lakers' mess?
To me, this is relatively simple. There's a lot of blame to go around, but it should land primarily at the feet of one person, and it's one person who was not mentioned there, and that's Jeannie Buss. A very wise man named Chris Carter once told me years ago, with new information, I can develop new opinions.
Yeah.
And maybe at one point Jeannie Buss thought a Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka with the Rambi operating in the shadows power structure was a good one. But the fact that she has gotten, and we have gotten, such overwhelming volumes of information that what's going on at Staples and with the Los Angeles Lakers is unlike anything else in the National Basketball Association. Do keep in mind, they are the only truly family-owned team left in the NBA. That to not adjust accordingly, it's one thing to say, well, the Warriors built a juggernaut with a former agent, Bob Myers, being the head of things. Why can't we build and Jerry West, by the way, kind of being a consigliere. Yeah. Why don't we mimic that model?
All these leagues are copycat leagues. Yep. If you get something that's successful, people try to duplicate it.
Why can't Magic be our Jerry and Pelinka be our Bob Myers? But to now have all this information and to not only not adjust, but the other option, if you're not going to adjust, is double down. Go hold a press conference, at the very least release a statement, and you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. I get it, where you would either have to fire Pelinka or disavow Magic, but you got to do one of the two. You can't be still having Magic call you his sister, you publicly going out to dinner with him, him publicly recruiting on your team's behalf while he napalms Rob Pelinka while you still seemingly stand by Rob Pelinka. So to me, that was my biggest takeaway from this article. Was it wasn't a lot of new information aside from Pelinka making up the Heath Ledger Kobe story, which was bizarre. It was that the buck has to stop with someone. It used to stop with Dr. Buss. It was very clear that was the power structure. Now it seems to stop with Jeannie and her brain trust, and they do appear to be in over their head.
I would go to the ownership for blame, and I believe that Magic has to take some blame, because if Magic tells Jeannie Buss that he's going to walk away and they come up with some type of exit strategy, a solution, they can have a statement, release a statement, have a press conference, and also, as far as moving forward, what we're going to say and what we're not going to say. This is not the first time someone's left a company or a breakup and everything, but typically you get some type of agreement in writing. What I'm not going to reveal as far as me leaving the building. So if Magic, being the most famous Laker of all time, if he was smart, and I know Magic didn't plan to walk away and be doing all these TV gigs that require you to make a statement about the Lakers, because all these things keep coming out. So Magic being the public figure, they didn't have a strategy after that. So it's out of control. So Magic still thinks he's a huge part of the organization. But in the meantime, in trying to explain these things, he makes Pelinka look bad, who happens to be the highest ranking basketball person there. It's just hard to get respect in the industry. I know that people that are watching this, potential free agents, forget about just the business of the Lakers. This is their most important summer after LeBron James. They freed up all that cap space. It should easily be able to land someone. And now they're hoping to be able to land one of the free agents.
You talk about the power and the power of Rob Pelinka. Does any of this in it coming to light change the way in which, whether it's Jeannie Buss, whether it's the Lakers organization as a whole, approach how they move forward?
Well, I think it's too late now. I think the problem is we're damn near to June. The NBA finals start tomorrow. The draft is June 20th. June 20th is the draft. The finals end on June 16th. The draft is June 20th. Free agency opens June 30th at 6 p.m. They had an alternative route when Magic walked away. And they didn't have to fire Rob that day. What they do in that moment, and this isn't a novel concept, is conduct a search for the opening, which was team president, bring someone in, and let that person evaluate everyone there. Let that person evaluate Rob Pelinka. Let that person give a plan for the team moving forward. But now, I think you are just stuck. I think their plan moving forward is hope and pray the gravity of LeBron attracts a free agent. And then hope and pray that either the New Orleans Pelicans don't get the deals they think they can get for Anthony Davis, or the Washington Wizards don't get the deals they think they can get for Bradley Beal, and have this offseason be successful despite your own best efforts seemingly to undercut.
And I do believe there's some things as far as the report that were wrong or inaccurate. As far as Rich Paul and him being a culture killer, number one, for your culture to be killed, you have to have a culture. Okay, so they didn't have a culture. They were trying. They were close at Christmas. They were getting something going on. So they didn't really have a true culture. In the last 6 years, no one's lost more games than them. They're tied with the New York Knicks. That's how bad they've been. So some of these things, yes, accurate. Some of these things blown out of proportion. Rich Paul riding on the team plane. He's here in Brooklyn. Magic consented for him. That's not the first agent to ever ride on a team plane. Now, because he represents Anthony Davis, there you might have a conflict of interest because how the Anthony Davis thing got out of control. But I'm still worried about the Lakers landing a big-time free agent.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Rich Paul. There's two things I feel like the audience should know that maybe wasn't very obvious upon first reading, or maybe a lot of people didn't read it. They just heard people talking about it. In my mind, a lot of this story comes from disgruntled members of Luke Walton's coaching staff that are no longer with the Lakers. Because the one person who escapes any criticism in this story is Luke. And, I mean, Luke obviously we can argue about the job he did with the Lakers. He's facing some very serious off-court allegations. He fell into a great job or a great opportunity in Sacramento with a young team. And for no one, even anonymously, to kill Luke Walton in this story when everyone else is getting killed gives me an idea of where some of these anonymous sources are coming from. But the other anonymous sources, the other league executives, the other agents, you have to keep in mind, people didn't like Pelinka. Agents don't typically like each other. People are threatened by Rich. So there's two groups of people that really dislike Rich Paul. This isn't a defense of him. This is just reality. One is agents. It is written in the story. Other agents are afraid to have their clients sign with the Lakers because they think Rich might poach them. Because Clutch Sports has built itself into something very powerful. And those agents have some jealousy. They feel Rich skipped the line. Rich didn't have to do a lot of the grunt work these guys did to build up their clientele. He walked in with LeBron James. But the other one is league executives resent what LeBron and Rich have created in the era of player empowerment. So if there's resentment towards the Lakers for Lakers exceptionalism for all the titles prior to these past 6 years, LeBron being there, Rich being there, Pelinka being there, which is to circle back why it was important for someone to try to, but put a dam up and stop all of these negative stories by saying this is what we're going to do in Los Angeles, because otherwise people are going to feast on the bones. Nobody will be happier than the rest of the league watching the Lakers piece by piece be ripped away. I think a lot of that were some of the genesis of this story.
All right, we got a lot more Lakers coming up in the show, but first, can Kawhi single-handedly take down the Warriors? That's next on First Things First. And you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on Sirius XM. We'll be right back.
With Factors, delicious, ready-to-eat meals you will be eating stress-free this spring. Each meal is chef-crafted, fresh, and dietitian-approved. More importantly, they are never frozen and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled up all day long. Try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, truffle butter, and shrimp. Restaurant-quality food that you do not have to prep, cook, or clean up. delivered right to your doorstep. And if you need to change your deliveries, you can pause or reschedule whenever you like. Factor is your solution for fast and premium meals. Also, for the month of April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. So what are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/firstthingsfirst50 and use code firstthingsfirst50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code firstthingsfirst50 at factormeals.com/firstthingsfirst50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next. Fuel up fast, eat better, and get back to what you love doing this spring with Factor.
Moving on to Kawhi Leonard. He's in the midst of a dominant playoff run where he's averaging over 31 points per game. Clippers head coach Doc Rivers had high praise for the star, calling his recent play the most like Jordan that we've seen. He'll have to continue this run to take down the Warriors. Here's Steph Curry on facing Kawhi.
He's a scorer, and he plays at his own pace really well. You try to speed him up, try to show him bodies, or play him one-on-one, and you know he has confidence to be able to get to a spot. So it's one of those things where one-on-one defense, you got to take that challenge, whoever's guarding him, try to force him into tough shots, understand he's going to make some of them, don't get deflated, get the ball out, go right back at him. But over the course of 48, same thing we do with any great scorer that we play against. It usually is not one person that we're going to leave on an island, but just got to make it tough on them, same way that they try to do to us, no matter who we play.
CeCe, how can the Warriors slow down Kawhi?
Well, as Steph said there, they're going to send a number of bodies at him. Kawhi is a very, very unique basketball player. He's not relying on the three-point shot. He's not relying on getting in the lane. He's not relying, like DeMar DeRozan, as far as just being an intermediate shooter. I mean, he's the worst kind of basketball player at all three levels. He is very good. Now, with his legs, which I believe he'll be healthier than he has been for a couple of weeks, because Kawhi can play above the rim. He can be explosive. So his ability to be able to hit that three-point shot, to me, opens up everything else. His overall playmaking is at its best as far as his career, as far as his offensive skills. That was the last thing to be able to develop. So the Warriors have been a good defensive team, but they had no answer for LeBron James in these finals. They just were able to contain him. They're trying to keep LeBron under 40. For a goal for them is probably keep Kawhi under 35. I believe Kawhi will get 28 to 34 points every game. They're not going to be able to do anything. And if Durant was there, it would give them an extra layer because you could have guys on the ball and then have some rim protection at the end. Iguodala is not 100%. This worst series was the worst one for him of the other three. So I look for Kawhi to be dominant, but they will pass him off. They will get Steph in some pick and rolls, and Kawhi will attack him. I think one of the ways to attack Kawhi, and Steph said it, is he's going to make some shots. When we get the ball, whoever he's guarding is going to have to be aggressive and take something out of him on the defensive end, Nick.
I feel like I know what the Warriors will do against Kawhi. I just don't know when they're going to unveil it. And that is what they did to Lou Williams in Game 6, the critical game against the Clippers after Lou Will had crushed him in Game 5. It's what they did to James Harden in Games 5 and 6 after the Rockets even the series. And it's what they did to Damian Lillard the entirety of the Western Conference Finals. We are going to blitz you. We are going to send two people at you and force the ball out of your hands and trust Draymond Green to play center field, so to speak. When it becomes a 4-on-3, we will see if you will be a willing passer. We will see if other people can beat us. We are not going to, if you're the Warriors, let Kawhi Leonard dominate the game by having a 40-plus point game. That is, it is the one guy they've gone up against the last few years that is the hardest to blitz, and they couldn't really do it, was LeBron, because he is such an exceptional passer and because of his size. But Harden's a very good passer. They blitzed him. Dame's a willing passer. They blitzed him. Kawhi, of those two, is probably the least apt the least skilled passing-wise. Now, he's also not bringing the ball up the court like those guys are, so he's not – you can't blitz him right past half court the way they were those guys when they were trying to initiate the offense. But I imagine that is what they will do with Kawhi, but I don't think they'll start the series off doing that because it compromises potentially the rest of the defense. And if Danny Green actually hits shots this series, he would have open corner threes repeatedly if that is the strategy they take.
Yeah, I think it becomes very, very hard, Sarah, for a wing player. If you have a point guard, it's easy to set a trap for them because every NBA team, what's their number one offensive weapon? They run pick and roll. When you have a wing player who is off the ball, and also you have that corner shooter. That corner shooter, his defender cannot blitz someone when he gets the ball. So Kawhi, his playmaking is going to have to be at its all-time best compared to taking a bunch of hard contested shots.
Well, and to your point about being a wing player, I think we see often out of Kawhi something different than we do with some others, like a Steph Curry, for example, the quick bringing it up the floor, the early pass, and then getting it back to be able to create with Kawhi. I think often you see him when the double team comes, he's always making the right decision, and he could pass so well out of double teams. It's going to be, I think, a lot of it up to Nick Nurse where they put him on the floor. Do you believe, though, and Nick, start with you, do you believe that these players like a Van Vliet, or whether it's Danny Green, Marc Gasol, do you think that they can perform as well as we have seen them throughout the course of these playoffs to be able to complement the numbers that Kawhi will put
up? I don't think the moment's going to be too big for Marc Gasol. I know the NBA Finals aren't too big of a moment for Danny Green. Now, these entire playoffs, Danny Green, it wasn't just the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right.
After shooting a career best from three during the season, 45%, he's at 31% in the playoffs. He's got to break out of that slump. I don't think the moment will be too big. Fred VanVleet seemed like the missing man, and then he made 14 of his last 17 threes. I think that question is what's going to determine this series. Because I think no matter how they defend Kawhi, I don't think Kawhi is going to have a 14.5 of 22 night in these finals. I think Kawhi is going to produce repeatedly, and it's going to be about of course the Raptors on the defensive side are going to have a lot of problems to deal with, but set that side of the ball to the side, so to speak. Can the other guys, when they have their open shots that are generated from the attention being put on Kawhi Leonard, can they knock down those open shots? And can Marc Gasol be a dangerous three-point shooter, which, if Boogie ends up playing, could play him off the court to a degree?
Marc Gasol is a big key as far as Kawhi being able to take him away, because they have to be able to play big. You can't have Golden State force you to be able to play small. I believe Kawhi is going to be effective as a passer. You mentioned the guards coming off the bench. Norman Powell, Van Vliet, those guys in the Eastern Conference final, they averaged 20 points between the two of them. If they get 20 points between the two of them, that's going to make this into a series. Powell starting to shoot the three-pointer, which opened up the dribble drive for him. If they get those types of things going, because they're going to have open shots. In the Milwaukee series, they had open shots against the Warriors. They're going to have open shots. It's a matter of knocking those shots down. So those reserve players, they play a key role in opening up the Warriors defense against Kawhi. Because if they're not hitting shots, then they're just going to collapse on Kawhi.
And the other element, real quick, when you said the Raptors have to be able to play big, I do not think the Raptors will win a single game in this series that they don't win the rebounding margin. Have to crush Golden State on the glass. Yep. It is where they have their most obvious advantage is their size, their length, and their ability to get not only offensive rebounds, but to finish the defensive possession by getting defensive rebounds. They have to dominate that category every game that they're going to have a real chance to win.
All right, speaking of size coming up, could Boogie Cousins be a major factor in the finals? That is next on First Things First.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
2019 FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off in 9 days. All eyes will be on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe, and the U.S. Women's National Team as the defending champions head to France looking to win a historic fourth World Cup. All the matches will be live here on Fox and FS1.
There's nothing like watching an international soccer tournament in New York City. And now we got the best team, because I've been taking on the chin watching the men play.
Right.
Now the women are coming. I'm talking much trash in every bar, Soho,
like
Tribeca.
Like
I'm coming for you, people.
Watch out. Time now for us to go viral. Lakers GM Rob Pelinka. He's in the middle of a media frenzy, and to add fuel to the fire, a recent report says Pelinka made up a bizarre story about Kobe Bryant and the late Heath Ledger having dinner together. Take a listen to this.
Just a really quick story. There was one time when Kobe, who I worked with for 18 years, was going back to play in Madison Square Garden, and he had just seen The Dark Knight. Obviously, you guys saw that movie. And he's like, hey, hook me up with dinner with Heath Ledger, because he got so locked into that role. I want to know how he mentally went there. And so we had dinner with Heath, and he talked about how he locks in for a role, and Kobe used some of that in his game against the Knicks in terms of mental preparation.
Okay, so the problem here is when The Dark Knight came out, a great movie with an all-time performance by Heath Ledger. Unfortunately, Heath Ledger had been dead for 6 months. So the idea that Kobe could have seen the movie and then had dinner with Heath Ledger, of course, is just impossible. And Rob Pelinka just lying for no reason. It's like, this is what I say to my kids. It's one thing to lie to get out of trouble. We've all done that. Some of us still do that. Like, I'll just tell a little white lie, try to get away with something. But to lie for no reason. Just a lie. Where'd you go today? Oh, I went to CVS. No, you actually went to the grocery store. Nah, I just heard the lie's funnier. I don't understand it. Why are you lying for no reason, Rob Pelinka?
Because you don't have no real stories to tell.
Oh. Then just keep your mouth shut.
Oh, right? that the Lakers, that was vast improvement. We hire you right now. You're running the Lakers.
And don't you think The Rock was sitting there like, wait, hold on.
I know. You're wondering what he's thinking.
Heath was not,
he's
I mean, not
some
only a pain in the way, but like, it was a big story when Heath Ledger passed away.
First of all, we've brought Rock there for a reason. Let him do what he's supposed to do.
Right.
Rock can get the guys. He's got some stories and everything. He definitely can't get into, oh, yeah, I got into this character. Come on. The Lakers are a mess. The Lakers are a mess.
Here we go. Time for some stories to start your morning. Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. KD has been ruled out of game one of the finals, but he did travel with the team to Toronto. CC, any chance we see KD in game two?
No, absolutely not. He hadn't returned. There's a procedure as far as once you're cleared by the doctors, then you start doing some movement exercise, then you start getting on the court. He hasn't advanced from the training room. Like, you haven't heard an update as far as, he stepped. No, he's not. I believe he's at least, it's 3 weeks today from the injury. They said the injury was a 4 to 6 week injury. So I believe he is not going to play at all.
Why do you think they had him travel? Because isn't that time that he could be spent rehabbing?
Well, the doctors and everything are with the team,
So he's traveling
for
that purpose.
Can you imagine Kevin Durant in the Bay Area 3 or 4 days unsupervised on Twitter and everything?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, yeah, shoot, man. Okay. That wouldn't be good.
All right, I can't yet rule him out for the series, but I would be shocked if he plays game two in Toronto. I'm with you on that 100%.
All right, moving on. Klay Thompson has been a bit of an unsung hero for the Warriors this postseason. Steve Kerr called him the best two-way guard in the league. Nick, do you agree?
So this is very interesting. This is offense, defense, and he says guard. He doesn't say perimeter player because right now Kawhi has clearly asserted himself there and Giannis as well, if you consider Giannis a perimeter player. I don't know who Klay would be competing with for this title. He's a better defensive player than Russ. He's a better defensive player than Harden. He's a better defensive player than his teammate Steph. Those are the guys that are
Bradley
better.
Bradley Beal?
Right. Beal to me would be the closest one to him.
He's a guard.
Right, absolutely. No, I'm saying Beal's the one whose defense of those guys is the closest to Klay's. Mm-hmm. But I think Klay's a better defensive player and a better offensive player than Bradley Beal, at least certainly a better shooter. So, yeah, I do agree.
Coach got it right. He got it right by saying guard. He made sure he didn't say best two-way player because then we have Kawhi, Giannis, and Paul George, all of them coming from the forward spot. So, coach is right. All right, coach, you got this one right.
All right, moving on. Kyrie Irving, he's trying to figure out where he will be playing next season. According to a report, Kobe Bryant is recruiting the point guard to come to the Lakers. Nick, think Kobe can sway Kyrie?
Listen, I think this is important. And if this is true, this is a great move by Kobe Bryant and a nice solid he's doing for the only organization he ever played with. Kyrie always said Kobe was the player he looked up to. Kobe was his favorite player. I think he always, in the Kobe-LeBron stuff, even though he played with LeBron, was always a Kobe guy, and his game mimics Kobe's much more than it mimics LeBron's. To me, this is going to be about who has more sway over Kyrie, Kobe and LeBron or his dad, Dredrick, because I think Dredrick wants him in the Northeast, either with the Knicks or the Nets. Obviously, Kobe and LeBron want him out West with the Lakers.
I believe his financial people with his dad want him here. And I would believe that there's some reservations about going to the Knicks. I think that the team in New York City more likely to get him would be the Nets. But Kobe doing this, being involved with the Lakers, I mean, if you go ahead and hired Rob Pelinka, I'm just going to bring Kobe aboard in some capacity. Magic's gone. I don't even know if I can afford him. I don't know if he can gas up the helicopter to come into the city to be able to work. But Kobe Bryant, if they're not going to do anything else, have Kobe involved because Kobe does have a certain amount of grit and work behind him.
And enormous cachet amongst players.
Yeah,
enormous cachet.
Finally, Kawhi Leonard has been tearing it up for Toronto, but he might not be playing for the Raptors for much longer. The Clippers, now the overwhelming favorites to sign him this summer. CC, what do you make of this?
Well, the Clippers were the favorite last season. If Kawhi could have picked a destination when he talked to Popovich and told him, I want to be out of here. I want to be on the West Coast. I want to be in L.A. Him and Uncle Dennis had to make sure that people last year when the word came out that they made sure it wasn't just the Lakers. Because Kawhi and talking to them at the time, he didn't care. He wasn't trying to team with any one person to develop a super team. The Clippers, they should be the favorite. He's a Southern California guy. With all the news going around with the Lakers, like, I would be shocked if they're able to overcome the huge deficit that they've created for themselves, and they started off with the deficit. It's like we're getting a staggered relay, and then the guy shooting the gun says, you know, wait a second, I'm going to give you another 10-yard head start. So the Lakers are trailing the Clippers because the organizational structure, the ownership, how the team is made out, and how they played in the playoffs with Doc Rivers did not hurt their case, Nick.
And I'll add another thing that I think has helped the Clippers enormously. What Kawhi has done in Toronto this year without another star player. Yeah. If there's a player in the league right now that can feel like, I don't need to team with anybody, it's that guy. I mean, is who's his best teammate? Kyle Lowry? Pascal Siakam, who's more about potential than what he is right now?
And if Kawhi was talking to Nick, he's not going to say much, but that would come out somewhere in the conversation. He feels that way more, even before he went to Toronto.
So this is, to me, the key part. I know from talking to you and your relationships and talking to people that know Kawhi at least a little bit, he was quiet, but he was enormously confident about him versus any of the other best players. Look at my record versus KD.
Head to head.
Head to head. Look at my record versus LeBron. My record versus Steph. Even though on a lot of those circumstances, the other teams were more stacked. But it's one thing to have that confidence. It's another thing to then go in almost an incubator or a test situation and be able to test it out. be able to go up against the Philadelphia 76ers, who had multiple all-stars, go up against the league MVP in Giannis, and now we'll see him go up against the Warriors. So as much as what he's done in Toronto has helped the Raptors' ability to keep him, it's also, I think, helped the Clippers' ability to be able to say, you don't have to have a superstar next to you. And of course, a low-maintenance guy like Kawhi, the calm and the stability of the Clippers versus the daily mayhem of the Lakers has to be a huge draw.
Kawhi gave us an example. What's the difference between an all-star and a superstar? DeMar DeRozan, good player. Perennial all-star player. Took them to the conference finals a couple times. Took that franchise as far as he could get them. And it was an easy swap out. There wasn't a whole bunch of less four or five guys. No. A couple guys here or there, but Kawhi is the main piece to that trade. And that's the difference. Toronto with role players and one superstar now. And let's not forget, this league is getting ready to recorrect itself. Mm-hmm. If Kevin Durant decides to leave Golden State, how many all-stars do you have to have now? You only got to have two? If you have one superstar like Kawhi, I think in this run he's been on, it's proved out that, yes, would he fit into the Clippers? Absolutely.
And sometimes Vegas knows things. And I'm going to do a little cross-pop culture reference for a moment. Spoiler alert for Game of Thrones people. But before this last season came out of nowhere, the kid Bran became an overwhelming favorite to basically win. And it's like, wait, what? It made no sense. But they knew. And he ended up winning. Out of nowhere yesterday, the Clippers went from 16-1 to win the title to 7-1 to win the title. They all of a sudden were minus 200 to get Kawhi Leonard. Sometimes Vegas knows some things, or some people that know some things, make some bets on some things that make Vegas know some things. Vegas thinks Kawhi's going to be a Clipper.
Yeah, and my source, which happens to be the streets, and the streets are talking, man.
Yeah.
The streets are talking, and they keep saying Clippers, Clippers, Clippers. And I think a lot of people, Sarah, in the world of basketball.
Oh, it's been consistent.
Think the Clippers.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about DeMarcus Cousins. Now, he went down early in the postseason with a torn quad and is questionable for game one of the finals. Boogie is still hoping to get on the floor to help bring home a title for Golden State. Cousins says, quote, I'm not a quitter. It's going to take a lot for me to fail. It's going to take an army and a navy. I'm just going to go down fighting. I've been working my tail off to get to this point, but I am healthy enough. CC, how should the Warriors use Cousins if he's ready to go?
Well, this is the first thing. As an athlete, I respect it, Boogie. Boogie's never been to this level. Boogie came there to try to repair his image, fit in, took that small salary that they had available, thought he was playing. He said he's playing chess and the rest of the world was playing checkers, right? Mm-hmm. This was his chess move. Well, Boogie Cousins is not a role player. And I could just imagine the pressure that he has put on himself and the training staffs that he could get back to this level. So, yes, I respect that. But I'm watching this tape. He ain't ready to play in no NBA finals. Not with the intensity that I've seen the last 2 weeks. Man, shooting around with the backup role players and the guys that do the work behind the scenes. Oh, no, he's not ready for no championship basketball. And he's never been a role player. So I got to have a come to Jesus meeting with him first. Hey, bruh, are you willing to play 8 to 10 minutes? I'm talking about I need your hair on fire, setting picks, getting rebounds. If you're not even going to get a shot, are you willing to do that? And if he's saying, yes, I'm willing to try to experience this championship atmosphere, I'm willing to sacrifice, then I would put him in the game. But I don't believe he's got the shape. I don't believe he's the mental wherewithal to be able to be in these situations because Boogie is an offensive player. You put him in an offensive set, man, you put him in a pick and roll, he is going to pop and he is going to shoot that basketball. So I just don't know if they can carve out a role. I'm always about having more bodies, but typically when you get a Bogut, you get someone else to come off the bench, you tell them you got an assignment and they are not going to deviate from that assignment. I don't know if Boogie Cousins is that guy.
And this is where, through no one's fault, it hurts them that when he came back, they treated him like the old Boogie Cousins. Yeah. They didn't say, you're going to come
back. Treat him like an all-star.
Right. Listen, when you come back from the popped Achilles, you're going to start off coming off the bench, play 8 to 10 minutes. Then we're going to, no. He played 31 games for the Warriors if we take out the game where he got hurt a couple minutes in. He played at least 20 minutes in 27 of those games. Two of the four that he didn't, they won by 40-plus points. Nobody played big minutes. In 26 of his 31 games, he took at least 10 shots. He's going to be out there. He's going to be shooting. Yes. Since his rookie season, Boogie Cousins played in 486 games. He has started 483 of them. He has no experience coming off the bench. He has no experience not shooting when he's open, not having the offense run through him. Even in Golden State, they were running sets through him.
Yes.
You don't get 10-plus shots. He was averaging like 11.5 shots a game in, relatively speaking, limited minutes. I just, for a guy who is dealing emotionally with multiple injuries, and now a guy who had never played in the playoffs, then played a game and a quarter of the playoffs before getting hurt. Hey, NBA Finals, and you're a pending free agent, and we're going for a three-peat, and we're going to ask you to play a role you've never played in your basketball life. Man, that is a big roll of the dice. I understand why people would say in the abstract, can he be better for 8 minutes than Andrew Bogut? Well, sure, theoretically, on 2K, he would be. You'd slot him in. But as an actual human being, it's a little bit tougher.
Is there an opportunity to experiment with this, though? Is there an opportunity when he's healthy to come back to say, okay, we're going to put you in the start of the second quarter, start of the fourth quarter, maybe run some things through you, 3-4 minute stretch. You can be on the floor with Clay, create some offense, see what happens. Or do you think this is a scenario and a stage that this is not the time that you want to mess up the chemistry that Golden State has now created?
Well, this is what I worry about. Are you taking Toronto serious in the NBA Finals experiment? Because we know Kevon Looney, we know exactly what he is going to do. Because in those assignments, because I'm giving Bogut the same assignment, I'm giving Boogie Cousins. Who do I think can play out that to the T? Who's going to stay on task? And I think the other guys are more apt to do it. I would love to be able to sit here and say Boogie. I would love to have Boogie get some experience. This is a big summer for Boogie. Like, he's had a couple bad breaks. Like, I'm pulling for him. But I can't be experimenting. I'm trying to win. I'm trying to three-peat.
And Boogie is, I don't think he's all of a sudden a guy who is just going to be emotionally zen. Right. And what have we seen from the Warriors since KD went down? You're playing 11 guys by the 8-minute mark of the second quarter. You're playing, everyone's getting run.
Yep.
And Boogie is going, so Boogie, is he going to be okay with being the ninth guy? Being the guy that does get in, but it's for 2.5 minutes? Because Jordan Bell's happy with that role. Damian Lee got a start. Mm-hmm. He's like, you got to be kidding me. I get to play. He did the opening tip, played 2 minutes, never went back in. He was still thrilled to play. That's a different role for this guy.
And another thing is, too, yesterday they announced the 12 referees. That are going to be officiating the finals. And the first two rounds of the finals, man, we had the referees and players going at it like we had the last couple years, mm-hmm. cats and dogs. In the finals, Eastern and Western, no problems. Not a bunch of technicals and everything.
Only one technical, the whole thing.
All that has worked itself out. Boogie Cousins can bring the referees back into this, and I don't want him to ignite Draymond. Because what we've seen from Draymond, man, the strides he made, talking about, oh, man, my kids are watching. Like, I can't be out of people like that. Everyone, like, I got to keep my team in the game. Boogie Cousins could ignite that fire now. And that's not something I'm sure that Golden State wants to see.
Not at all. Interesting to see. All right, coming up, will the dysfunction around the Lakers keep them from landing a marquee free agent? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to the show. FS1 NBA analyst and NBA champ Antoine Walker joins the show in Chicago, Nate. With a little Chicago love here.
Yeah, of course. You know you're from Chi-Town. It's the best time to be here, Nick. Finals, baby.
Absolutely.
And, bro, I got to give you credit now. You were so right about Bledsoe. And Nick was like, man, they're going to win the championships. Hey, man, that point guard, man, I'm just telling you, I like him, but I don't know. Good.
Yeah, I had to buzz with, Bledsoe let me down, man. That's when you get somebody $70 million at All-Star break.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely right.
Makes sense. There's a little focus after that.
Makes sense. Before we get to some finals talk, let's talk Lakers. A destructive article came out yesterday describing the dysfunction in detail. Among the accusations, Magic Johnson was described as a bully. GM Rob Pelinka doesn't always seem to tell the truth, and LeBron's agent Rich Paul was described as a culture killer, advocating for Luke Walton to be gone as early as November of last season. Antoine, do you think LeBron regrets signing there?
I think he has to regret it a little bit because, obviously, he dealt with Magic when he came in, and him and Magic had a plan in place. It was not Rob Pelinka. It was not Jenny Buss at his house. It was Magic there talking to him. And then, obviously, when you look at how he left the game, I mean, it really has got to be disheartening for LeBron, because not to be told, hey, look, I'm stepping down, some other things going on, but, you know, I'm going to be here to support you. Not to give him any type of reassurance after you get LeBron James, the best player in the world, to come play with you. Obviously, you feel bad about LeBron, because you don't know what direction. And all you got to do is look for the coaching search. The coaching search tells you everything that why LeBron James should be mad. Obviously, Ty Lue is his guy. You don't want to bring him in. You bring in Frank Vogel. Then you bring in Jason Kidd to be his assistant. So it's just a lot of chaos. So if I'm LeBron, I'm starting to regret and don't know which direction the team is going in. And hopefully they can try to salvage this thing a little bit in free agency. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of question marks, because you don't know what free agent would want to play with this big drama going on right now.
Well, it's going to come down to me, what happens over the next 60 days about free agency, over the next 45 days, really. Whether or not, from a basketball perspective, LeBron's going to spend the last years of his career competing for championships or competing for individual records. Like, because that's what it is. Like, if he showed you last year, he'd still be 27-8-9 in the 55 games he played. But if they strike out in free agency and the trade market, Anthony Davis, Bradley Beal, acquiring another all-star caliber player, then what LeBron's got to go for is, wants to break the all-time record in scoring, the most All-NBA teams of anybody ever. He tied that record this year with his third team appearance. Like, those types of things. And that is not what LeBron signed up for. Now, does he regret it? Because I believe the decision to go to the Lakers was not just about basketball. And people think it's about Space Jam and the movies. Part of it's about his business. But the primary factor that wasn't basketball was his family. It's where his wife and kids wanted to be if they weren't going to be in Akron. So I think if he had to do it all over again, he would still sign with the Lakers. And I think that is because he believes they are not going to strike out in free agency because of the gravity that he has on certain players in this league. But what will determine whether or not this Lakers decision was on the court a disastrous one is what they do in these next 45 days. And the only thing the Lakers have going for them these next 45 days, two things. One, they got lucky in the lottery, which should help them in the trade market, and they have LeBron James. Everything else has been working against them getting a star player.
There is no way LeBron James, wherever he is sitting today, is comfortable with the situation. Now, everyone's got a family. Most people have a wife. Most people have kids. But the opportunity that LeBron James had in the era where he has dominated basketball, and now, because of the dysfunction of the Lakers, the Golden State and the Kevin Durants, they pulling away from LeBron. So let me tell you what LeBron doesn't want. Forget the Lakers. He don't want Steph to get 5 titles. He don't want KD to end up getting 4. Because for his overall legacy, and my man over here, Mr. Oh, he's the greatest player ever, you can play for all them numbers you want to. But in the NBA, they have always kept who's the best players by championships. And you can't be saying you the best player in the world, and you got guys in your sweet spot, in your prime, and they are taking championships, and they are collecting rings. So his legacy is at stake, and you can't tell me he's not regretting. He could have stayed in Cleveland, not to trust somebody. He didn't trust Dan Gilbert. He didn't trust him. He could have stayed there at the crib. He'll always be from Ohio. You can always buy a house in L.A., man. I can always get my family out to L.A. So him sitting, us sitting here today saying LeBron wouldn't have some regrets, it's Memorial Day. He's having a cookout, man, with the other. That, you think that was fun?
Oh, no.
No, absolutely.
But so, I think there's, just real quick, see, I think, don't you think there's a difference between disappointed in what has happened and wish you had made a different decision? That's the distinction I'm drawing. Of course, this year, everything that's happened here has been, he got hurt. They missed the playoffs. The coaching search was a disaster. Those things, no one
denies. LeBron could have signed a 2-year deal with Cleveland. All right? Stayed in Cleveland. You can always move to L.A. We act like he had to move to L.A. right now. And now when you're sitting out of the playoffs, Magic Johnson is on television talking about the organization. Your coach that you wanted, Ty Lue, they wouldn't even give him, he couldn't even control his own staff. So Anthony Davis is no guarantee. Now with the Knicks having a pick and other people want him, KD potentially going to New York, Kawhi potentially not even interested in your conversation. Those are gut-wrenching things to come to grips with.
I think, and then also you got to look at from the big point of picture is that LeBron James really right now don't have anybody on a team. He kind of lost those young guys. So by him losing those young guys, he got to get them back together, get them back in the gym, get them back focused, because you don't know what free agency is going. This might be your teammates. You may have to be with Ball and Ingram and Kuzma. So you got to reestablish that, too. So all that plays a part, too. And this is his first time watching. I mean, this guy's been in the playoffs 13 years, 8 times in the finals. Believe me, he's regretting it right now a little bit. He wants to be out there. This is the best time of year.
But, Antoine, with that being said, there's nothing he can do now about the front office, the coaching staff, any of that. But with free agency, as a player, how do you think LeBron should approach what his role is and how he should go about or what he should do in terms of recruiting other free agents and who will be on his roster along with him?
I think he should be very active in who they go after. I think he should give a wish list of guys he would like to play with, and this maybe that's a sheet of paper. If they need him to sit in the room, he should sit in the room, make the phone call on July 1st to some guys to see if they want to come play, talk to them about what he's trying to do and where he's trying to get to. I think he has to be active with this group. Frank Vogel, I went to school with Frank. I like Frank. I thought he's done a terrific job as a coach, but I don't know how many free agents he's going to influence to come to L.A., and that's not a knock on him. Mm-hmm. Jason Kidd may have a better a grip of that and more, you know, because he's played with a lot of these players or had a different relationship with them, so he may be able to convince them, but you got to ask LeBron James to be on that couch, be in that office with you as you recruit guys.
That is the determining factor. If you now, the best choice would have been no dysfunction and get the free agent, and Magic doesn't, I'm not going to be here anymore. But that's out the window now. I would believe if LeBron had the choice between these two options, the Lakers are a perfectly run organization, none of these headlines, Ty Lue is hired as the head coach, and they don't get an all-star, or all this mayhem. Frank Vogel's the coach, Ty Lue gets insulted, Linda Rambis is the shadow owner, but Kyrie comes and signs. I think that is the more preferable option. Now, the worst of them all is you deal with all this mayhem, and Nikola Vucevic is the best you can do this summer. Then it's a disaster. Then, to me, you start talking about real regret about how the twilight of his career is going to go.
Our NBA champ, we're going to actually get to the finals talk coming up. Stick around. Can Kawhi single-handedly take down the Warriors? That's next on First Things First. Here with Antoine Walker, and we are going viral. The Warriors and Raptors are getting ready for the finals, but the rest of the league is already working on their summer plans. Jimmy Butler has turned his attention to the next generation of stars. Take a look.
All right, my Gracie said she wanted to start playing basketball, so I got her a coach. Gracie! Gracie, who's your basketball coach?
Jimmy!
The best coach ever.
Jimmy Butler coaching little Gracie. Oh, God. WNBA, here we come.
Jimmy Butler and Mark Wahlberg are longtime, really close friends, evidently, from what I've read. I didn't know Jimmy Butler was in the coaching business. That's really cool.
No, I think he was in Chicago, Mark Wahlberg. He met him in Chicago, and they became good friends. I think he was filming a movie or something in Chicago, and Jimmy Butler went on set, and they became good friends.
That's nice. Jimmy Butler really trying to repair his image and everything, working with kids and everything. Uh-huh. He's messed up a couple locker rooms.
Did you see the background there, see? It looked like it was your old neck of the woods. I think that was up in the Hollywood Hills where you briefly laid your head.
Hey, man, I did notice that, but don't be giving away
stars.
Where I like to hang out, Nick.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have people coming to your house in Harlem.
Well, I mean, you talk about where I go out in Harlem.
121st Street. That's okay. Where he's at.
Back to Kawhi Sitting Leonard.
On the corner with a black and mild. Holla, holla.
Leonard's in the midst of a dominant playoff run where he's averaging over 31 points per game. Clippers head coach Doc Rivers had high praise for the star, calling Kawhi's recent play the most like Jordan that we've seen. He'll have to continue this run to take down the Warriors. Here's Steph Curry on facing Kawhi.
He's a scorer, and he plays at his own pace really well. You try to speed him up, try to show him bodies, or play him one-on-one, and you know he has confidence to be able to get to a spot. So it's one of those things where one-on-one defense, you got to take that challenge, whoever's guarding him, try to force him into tough shots, understand he's going to make some of them, don't get deflated, get the ball out, go right back at him. But over the course of 48, same thing we do with, you know, any great scorer that we play against. It usually is not one person that we're going to leave on an island, but, you know, just got to make it tough on him, same way that they try to do to us, no matter who we play.
All right, Antoine, how can the Warriors slow down Kawhi?
They have to have the same approach that they had when they guarded Dame Lillard last series, where they trapped him in a pick and roll, kind of showed him a double team, and make Kawhi become a willing passer, which he is now in his career. He's definitely a willing passer. But you got to get the ball in his hands as much as possible and not allow him to get one-on-one opportunities every time down the floor. You got to show him different coverages, and then you got to hit him with multiple guys. I think obviously this is what it hurts, not having Kevin Durant, because now you get another guy who's 7 feet with quick feet that can probably guard him and challenge at the rim. But you got Andre Iguodala, who's used to guarding guys like this with their skill, this type of skill level. He'll be able to do a pretty good job on him. Then you got to figure out who's going to be that next guy. Is it going to be Klay Thompson? Are you willing to take that chance of getting in foul trouble? Jordan Bell, do you trust the young guy Jordan Bell to guard him? Alphonso McKinney, this is his first time in the finals. So do you trust those young guys to come in and give minutes at that spot with Kawhi Leonard, which is a guy who can get you 35, 40 points in any given moment? He's shown that, obviously, throughout the playoffs. So you got to double him, limit his touches, make him a willing passer. I don't think you're going to just shut him down, but you have to take the ball in his hands as much as possible.
Well, we have seen the Warriors, and they've played against some other stars. Nick, you mentioned it. You mentioned Damian Lillard, what they did against him. Other stars
James
that they
Harden.
Faced, James Harden when they faced him. The biggest problem is that these guys ignited the offense. Let me tell you when Houston had something, and the reason why Chris Paul was upset was when they put Harden off the ball and they had to play him honest, and Chris Paul was orchestrating the offense, they couldn't trap him. They couldn't do that because they were concerned about Harden. So when you take the ball out of the point, or your primary scorer is not the point guard, it presents a number of problems defensively. So they would have to play uncharacteristically, undisciplined, if they start double-teaming Kawhi and he's in the post and he's on the wing. I think that they're going to force Kawhi to pass the basketball as much as possible, but try to stay within their integrity. When they guarded LeBron, they couldn't take the ball out of LeBron's hands because he moved around so much. He didn't handle the ball as much as he's done with the Lakers. So it made it hard to impossible. That's why it became, let's just contain him. Let's be physical with him. I believe the problem for Kawhi is foul trouble. Iguodala and Klay, if they get into any type of foul trouble, they don't have an answer. I don't believe Draymond can guard him for 20 minutes. I believe that Draymond's lack of moving side to side, and Draymond would definitely get in foul trouble. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the Warriors will do. This is the worst defensive Warriors team we've seen in this five-year run, though.
And if they are going to, because I think they will do exactly what you're talking about a fair amount, particularly if Kawhi is the one bringing the ball up the court, which he has been doing at times, Draymond won't be a part of that because Draymond's the key to the three-man defense they would be running if they send two at him. Draymond's got to kind of play center field. But no matter what defense the Warriors throw at Kawhi, I want the audience to understand the type of problem that's on their hands. 28, 8, and 5 on 53% from the field, 46% from three. That's Kawhi Leonard the last time he was in the playoffs. This isn't a one-year wonder here. That's Kawhi Leonard, what he was doing until Zaza maimed him by putting his foot under his ankle. Like, so this year's 31-9-4 on slightly actually worse percentages. Like, Kawhi was building the resume of all-around playoff killer up until midway through the third quarter of the Western Conference Finals that the Spurs had a huge lead on before he got hurt. And they didn't play the rest of that series. Basically didn't play at all last year, and then he picked up this year exactly where he left off. He had a really interesting quote during the season that I had forgotten, but Kevin O'Connor mentioned on his podcast yesterday, which was, regular season games, he said, are my practices to get ready for the postseason. And Kyrie had similar commentary, and then the postseason came, and he fell flat. Kawhi said that, and he has proven himself right. The load management, the working on the weaknesses in his game throughout the regular season, so he is peaking at the exact right moment, which is to say, no matter what defense they play, if they try to play him straight up, if they blitz him, if they do a little bit of both, if they have a rotation of guys on him, no matter what defense you throw at him, Kawhi is going to hurt you. The question is to what degree, and when you do force the ball out of his hands, who else can make shots, or are those guys going to miss the open shots he generates?
With all that being said, Antoine, let's go back to what Doc Rivers mentioned, that this is the most like MJ that we've seen. What have you seen out of Kawhi in a comparison like that one that Doc made?
He's got some Michael in him because he can score. He has a good mid-range game. I think Michael, I think probably because Kawhi's hurt, plays above the rim a little bit better than Kawhi does as far as attacking the rim. But Kawhi lost a little bit of that with his injury. But basketball-wise, yeah, because he plays both ends of the floor. Michael will guard the best player, do things defensively. And the way Kawhi does it, he knows his spots. He picks his spots. He knows where he wants to go on the offensive end. And if you watch most guys that play in this league now, especially the superstars, they don't really necessarily have those type of games like Kawhi. Kawhi kind of separates himself. I mean, LeBron has a game, to me, I think, you know, obviously James Harden, that style. But every night, Kawhi, you know he's going to – he can get you mid-range. He can get to the free throw line 10 times. And he's added the three-point shot to get over 40%. So now he becomes really, really dangerous. And he does have some Michael in him. You don't think about it, maybe because the braids. You know, you know what I'm saying? You really don't. You may not think about it, but he does in a lot of different areas because he's one of the best two-way players, if not the best two-way player.
Right. In the two-way, he mirrors Michael in a lot of ways. On the defensive end, you don't see a lot of players that just take the ball away from the opposition. That's what MJ was able to do on a regular basis. That's what Kawhi is able to do. As far as the mid-range game, that's the part that Doc is talking about. Because MJ, and another move that he is, the multiple between the legs, that was MJ too. We've seen Kawhi yo-yo it a few times. Let me do it again. That was MJ. And then I'm going to pull up from 15, 12, get to a certain spot, a lot like the legendary Bernard King did. So I could see the similarities there. Most NBA players aren't built that way, but this has evolved. And Kawhi, man, he started 3 feet away from the bucket. He talks about San Antonio, how they taught him how to shoot the ball, how to shoot his free throws, and eventually get him through the three-point line. So the evolution, all these young players out there, Ben Simmons, more talent than Kawhi Leonard will ever have. If he started off like that, that's the way you develop to become a complete player, and that's what we're witnessing in these.
It's so funny you mentioned Bernard King, because that's the – people go to Michael Jordan, but the Bernard King, which is there's 13 spots on the floor that I want to get to. I will get there, and I will only shoot from those spots. Kawhi's got his spot on the baseline, the corner three, and then the shorter shot, which is the shot he hit to win Game 7. He obviously has the wings, the top of the key. But I want people to understand, Doc Rivers, because I think people hear, oh, now he's Michael Jordan. He's not saying he's the best player since Michael Jordan. He's saying stylistically he's similar to him. Kobe obviously mirrored his entire game after MJ's, but MJ took much smarter shots than Kobe and did it at a much higher efficiency. Kawhi's efficiency this postseason, the last postseason he played in, has been really, really good, and there are some elements where just to your eye, you could see Michael going to those same spots, taking those same shots. It's not saying the players are comparable. It's stylistically what they're doing. And in this playoff run, he is playing at a near Jordan-esque level on both ends.
All right, Antoine, we're going to see you a little bit later in the show, but coming up, could the Raiders be adding too many big personalities? That's next. And first things first.
Is big personalities a euphemism for bad guys?
I don't know.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.